review, huh? Yeah. We got a good one today.
Yeah, nice.
Alvin, you have your
what?
Cassettes or CDs?
Yeah,
or?
I have CDs.
Great.
Should I assume people know I'm sitting in a room, or shouldn't I?
No.
I am sitting in a room different from the one you are in now. I am recording the sound of my speaking voice, and I am going to play it back into the room again and again until the resonant frequencies of the room reinforce themselves so that any semblance of my speech, with perhaps the exception of rhythm, is destroyed. What you will hear then are the natural resonant frequencies of the room articulated by speech. I regard this activity not so much as a demonstration of a physical fact, but more as a way to smooth out any irregularities my speech might have.
For Alvin Lussier, a space architecture means straight out a sound instrument, and sure, he is the first composer exploring during his rich creative life as far as the acoustic space as he does.
Yeah. What's
an old piece? I have
let's see.
Memorial in Higgins for the clarinet and oscillator, which has the spatial.
I think that might be nice, or something that relates to the snare drums that they're going to hear, or, well, it doesn't really matter. I mean, just something to get people talking.
Alvin Lussier, born in 1931, is a pioneer in many fields of composition and performance, as well as live performance using brainwaves.
Let's see how it sounds in here, because I haven't played anything.
As creating visual pictures by sound with responsive surfaces, as making us listen to natural resonant frequencies of the room.
How do you turn the power on? Oh, it was on.
His works consist also of sound installations, compositions for soloists, for chamber ensembles, and orchestra, in which very close pitches overlapping each other create sound waves crossing the space.
You're a sound artist.
Just about 10 days ago. Of course, at this time, I like the shoes.
Shoes.
Yeah, they're nice.
They look
better than me. I like the shape of them.
I like the zippers.
Yeah.
Shoes with zippers. I love shoes with zippers.
Oh, yes, I too, because it's very...
It's very easy.
Hello? Fast.
Yeah. I like the name of today.
Cute. Oh,
the neat. The ground, so you get very insulated.
I really like them.
And it keeps the neat. The ground, so you get very insulated.
We're ready to begin. If you could all take a place anywhere at the table.
In 1999, Charles Amerkanian organized in San Francisco at the Fort Mason Center, Cowell Theater, the fifth Other Minds Festival, where the composers and performers Erolyn Wallen, Linda Bouchard, Mary Ellen Childs, Margaret Lang Tan, Antonio Pino Vargas, Julian Priestley, Sam Rivers, Luc Ferrari, and Alvin Lussier were invited.
Hello.
We were falling asleep last night, being serenaded by the toy piano.
This festival, from the 25th to 27th of March, was preceded by a 4-day stay of all participants at the Gerasi Foundation as guests of the Gerasi Artist Program, where everyone presented an overview of his artistic work. The Gerasi Foundation is isolated in a huge, hilly and savage field with boundless view, abroad from any diversion. There, artists of all branches of art and of all origins have the opportunity for a creative, because calm, stay. Once a big farm, the barn is used today as studios and residence for the artists, while everybody come together for the meals at the former farmer house.
First of all, I spent 4 years working here as the director of the Gerasi program. And before that, I was for 23 years working at KPFA in Berkeley as a music director. And I met a lot of you through those contacts at the radio station. And when I left Berkeley, Jim Newman called me and he said, you know, it's too bad you won't be here to interview composers anymore. Maybe we should do something when you leave Berkeley and come down here. So we got together and we thought of the idea of trying to do a music festival. Now, Jim and I both want to support the work of people who are making really extraordinary contributions to music that were, for one reason or another, not recognized on the level they should be. We try and play in this festival.
I am sitting in a room different from the one you are in now. I am recording the sound
should
of
I
my
just
speaking
play
voice.
Or should I say a few things? Or
and I am going to play myself again and again until the
for some reason lost interest in making a kind of a music that is thought of as, for example, low and high in terms of frequency, or in terms of left and right and low and high on a page. When I was a student in Italy in the 60s, I went to the music festivals with all this complicated music, which I admired very much, but I felt it wasn't my music. And the scores were getting bigger, more complex. It seems that every time you looked, the score of somebody like Reginono or Kalmheinz-Stockhausen was bigger, more complex. And everyone thought that was sort of great. Okay? And I looked at that music, and as much as I admired it, I thought, this has got nothing to do with me.
Hello?
Hello, Alvin. Theme.
Yes.
It is a piece where the speakers used vessels.
Yes.
And which kind of vessels are these? How did the sound come out of them?
Yeah, well, each player had a vessel with a microphone in it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one had a bottle, a milk bottle. One had a seashell. And one had a small vase.
Mm-hmm.
And one had an empty ostrich egg.
Really?
And as they spoke, the voices go into the vessel, and the microphones simply pick up the sound of the voice in the vessel, so you get the frequencies of the vessel.
To discuss garden.
Glitterist.
Glitterist. Glitterist. glitterest.
Thou that glitterest.
All beautiful in storms, thou that glitterest.
Too bad glitterest. It looks so good.
And after making several pieces, I discovered I was interested in space. I'm not the only one, obviously. But I mean space that helps you compose the particular work, not loudspeakers placed around. That didn't interest me, the sound coming from there, sound coming. But I thought, what if you could make sound really move in space in a natural way? Not using panning or electronics. I'm very interested in sounds that move perpendicular to the source of sound. Where does it go? Not what does it feel like? But where does it go? Where does that sound wave go? It's going somewhere. The first piece I made that I felt had something to do with that was called "I'm Sitting in a Room," where I recycled speech, recorded speech in a room, and then played it back into the room. And made a recording of that and played it back into the room. Pretty soon, the room acoustics, the physical dimensions of the room are impinging their characteristics on the waves. And pretty soon, only the dimensions and their resonances are. That's all you're going to hear at the end of the piece. So it's really the space in the room that makes the sound. I set it on snare drums, five or more. I just say five. Five, I could use more, but...
They're all the same size?
They should be the same, because then if things are the same, you hear the differences. If they're different, you know they're different. My idea is that. But anyway, the five players are up on stage, and they play just a series of cascading clusters that go up. They play long tones. I have to minimalize what the players do. So I chose a range that I felt the drums would be responsive to.
How many snare drums did you use for the piece for piano and snare drums?
Usually four.
Four snare drums.
This piece is music for piano with one or more snare drums.
Not those drums. But the snare drum is an all-time great sensitive object. I don't know if it's going to work. It's hard to make it work. I had an experience Thursday night in New York. I did the piano piece with oscillators, and we started, we set up the speakers and thing, and it didn't work. It was getting late, it was getting time for the piano tuner to come, and I tried this and I tried that, and then all of a sudden it started to work. And I can't tell you why. So we have to set the drums up and it could work immediately. I'd love it if I didn't have to amplify them. I don't like amplification of natural sounds. Doesn't seem. I mean,
I use loudspeakers because you make the works that way, but to amplify something, I'd rather do without it. And of course, it means that someone sitting down in the front row is only going to hear the drums around. So I never know. I have to go in and see what the room is. And then even if it does sound right, you never know if it's going to work. What I really like is if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And then all of a sudden, one little drum will sound. And then it starts working. You don't know why it starts working in this range. It didn't before. Yeah.
Sans amour front glisse comme un beau rêve.
I never know.
Comme le frais baiser dans ma tombe qui se lève. C'est de l'amour. C'est de l'amour, j'espère.
Alvin?
Yes?
Whose voice is singing in French in the Duke of York?
Oh, comment sent-il-ci s'envoler.
What? I don't really... Oh, God.
Que j'aime ce silence.
In French?
Yes.
Comme je respire un air.
I don't remember.
In French.
I don't remember.
Oh, jeune fille, oh, ma charmante, oh, ma trop idéale.
Maybe I should play it and find out.
Yes.
But my memory of it is that I sang everything. Are you sure?
Yes. But perhaps it was you.
Sitting in a room different from the one you are in now. I am recording the sound of, you know, so forth. And then I...
Wait, but another concrete example is, remember the teapot? Alvin bought 5 of these lovely Chinese teapots in Chinatown because one worked very well. He went and bought 4 more. And the others didn't work.
They're exactly alike as far as I can see.
The acoustical properties were not the same, even though they're mass produced.
Teapot.
These were not, you know, high class teapots. They were just very functional teapots. And yet, finally, I got my own teapot.
About the gamelan piece.
Oh, yes.
Which is a technique the players use?
There are 4 players,
mm-hmm,
who use the instrument is bonang, B-O-N-A-N-G, and they pick them up and they put them over a microphone. Each player has a microphone, and then the engineer assistant raises the volume of the microphone, create feedback, which has the pitch of the interior of that particular instrument. Oh. So it creates a tone.
A sustained tone.
Yeah, so there are four of those that sort of come in and out. Uh-huh. And they tap on those instruments and try to find the pitch of the bonang sound. Mm-hmm. And when they get pretty close, they can never get exactly, because it would never happen that a bonang is tuned exactly the way that a pitch on a gendir is tuned. So it creates audible beating.
Fearless, actually. He's just fearless. This is Peter Kotick. He's fearless, you know, he'll do anything. And he asked me to write him a piece. I thought, oh my God, what do I do with three orchestras? Well, that was a great piece for Stockhausen. I mean, one of the first pieces that used the placement of the orchestra. So I'm so scared because I don't think it's going to work. But anyway, the strings of each orchestra, there are three, are divided into two sections, the violins and the other low strings, violas, cellos, basses. And they draw a diamond shape, each one. They slide like the oscillator. The violins slide up and down, then the low strings slide down and up. So each orchestra makes a diamond shape of a little slightly different shape. As they do so, nine soloists play across those waves. So I'm counting on the soloists from one orchestra to make interference patterns, those beats, with their own orchestra and the other two orchestras. I don't know if it's going to work. I wake up at night and I worry about it.
think one of the most exciting experiences I ever had was when I heard a piece that Alvin wrote in the early 80s. It was played by the Chicago Symphony. And there was an oscillator going up from low to high, and as the instruments were in that range, they would join in with the oscillator going up. And it was absolutely astonishing to see the Chicago Symphony playing what appeared to be circular breathing and all this.
I felt that piece was didn't work.
Didn't work.
I felt badly about that piece. I don't know.
Really?
I've always felt. Yeah. Sometimes you think. Do you ever have that experience? You think, oh God, what a bad night. What a bad night I had. Well, one guy did. I didn't know it. And John Cage said, you should get the union to sue him. Well, a piccolo player. No, they can't sabotage a piece if they're getting paid. Iceberg that, or like something going into outer space, it goes out of audibility. I don't care. It's gone. I don't care. And he apparently, I was on the other side of the stage. He thought it was so stupid, this piece. He would play a note. And then he'd put his instrument down and smile.
Alvin, thank you very much.
I was going to take a long walk, but I don't have time anymore.
Echo?
Echo.
Echo,
this empty glass.
Downstairs?
Yes.
Okay.
Hey.
I was going to put the microphone in it, you see, in the resonances.
And I still want to do your car horn piece, the one with the car horns, where my movement would, as a dancer, would activate.
Oh,
the
burglar alarm in the piano.
Yeah, yeah, we've got to do that one. The burglar alarm in the piano. That's
the burglar alarm in the piano.
Margaret spoke about a piece with cow
horn.
Is that right? And a Berber carpet inside
the piano.
That's
the burglar alarm in the piano.
Is that right?
You can only move.
No.
I have motion.
No,
motion,
that's not me.
Detectors.
Margaret Lingtat?
Yes.
And the piano is there.
You mean an automobile?
There's a
I have
in the
an installation with an automobile alarm.
Motion detectors.
That senses motion.
And when
motion.
You stop.
The
burglar alarm in the piano.
The
you can only I have motion. Motion detectors.
That attached to an automobile.
The piano is there.
Alarm system.
There's a loudspeaker in the piano, and whenever you move in the space, the alarm goes off inside the piano.
Face down on the
piano
strings
of
the piano. So
long as you stop,
it sets the piano.
It doesn't do it, but the minute you
into sympathetic
vibration.
But there's no carpet. You mean a rug? Carpet, a rug.
Motion
like a...
detectors.
Barbara.
Waves in the air?
Yeah,
no,
I've
never
motion.
Done that.
So.
But is this sound
it's the washing machine. It is the dishwasher.
We can make a piece out of it.
Yeah, it's the dishwasher.
Tonight,
it's important if we want to have clean glasses.
Yeah, at some point.
Okay, tonight.
Well, now
we finished,
right? It'll start again,
I
think.
Okay.
Sure, okay.
Yeah?
I'll drive.
All right,
see?
Do you have your car here?
We'll do the Chevy. where are you?
Beginning with it.
Yeah, Sarkaz. I did a concert of Morton Feldman and Earl Brown. I was a choral director.
Yeah.
And I had a chorus at Brandeis University. A small group with undergraduates at Brandeis. And John Cage and Merce Cunningham had a group, and they did a concert at Town Hall in New York, Earl Brown and Morton Feldman. So I met Feldman. I'll get to your answer. I met Feldman at a party, and I'd just come back from Italy, and I just started being a choral director. I had a chorus that didn't sing anything yet. They didn't know anything. And Feldman said, oh, you have a chorus. Can you sing our music? Can you sing, you know? And I said, of course. So he invited me down to do one of his choral pieces. And Bob Ashley and Gordon Mumma and some other composers from Ann Arbor, Michigan, came in a little automobile. They drove all the way from Michigan to go to this concert because it was important. Who ever heard Morton Feldman's work? So I met Bob and Gordon there. And that was 1963-64. Then in 65, I was at Brandeis. I did a concert with Ms. Cage in 1965, in the art gallery at school, because the music department wouldn't invite John Cage.
Mm-hmm.
But I had the art gallery in height of John Cage. So then the next year, I wanted to do another concert in the art gallery. So I thought of Bob and Gordon. And also David Behrman was a friend of mine. And I said, well, let's, just the four of us, we'll do a concert. They said, okay. So it was a terrible concert. Everything broke. Nothing worked. But anyway, we went home that night, and I said, well, gee, it was so interesting, we should go to Europe, have a European tour. This was 1966.
But it was already the prohibition to use electronic.
Oh, yeah. Gordon and David had an independent studio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The It was called the Independent Studio, where they would invite composers to come and work. And I had done my Brainwave piece the year before, Music for Solo Performer. So I was interested in live electronic music. It was all based on David Tudor and John Cage. You know?
In the dictionary that this word means also something like a sudden brilliant inspiration. Is that right?
No.
It isn't?
Brainwaves, actual alpha waves.
Yes, I understand this, but brilliant inspiration for brainwaves.
Well, all my pieces are brilliant inspiration.
I know.
Do you know my brainwave piece?
Yes.
That was 1965, and then I was making Vespers, a piece with echolocation instruments that sent out of these pulse waves in echoing off the environment. That was a piece I did, and then I did it. I'm sitting in a room in 1969. Do those pieces, and then Bob would do various.
What was the concept?
We were just four composers who played each other's music on a concert. We always had the four pieces. That's all. There was no other concept. We our works all used.
But you have a idea, philosophical idea.
Yeah, but
not together. But you or.
Yeah, we were very different, but we all liked. It's very hard to explain, but we had a spirit was the same, our spirit, and we shared equipment, and it was easier to get concerts with the four of us than it would be with only one person. It was easier, you know, so there was no deep philosophical. But
you have an idea of research, idea of aesthetic.
Yeah.
Of adventure.
Yeah, it was a lot of it came from John Cage and David Tudor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard for me to explain in those terms, but we were more active than thoughtful. We did it, you know. We didn't think too much about it. We liked each other and we would do the concerts. We didn't think too much. We didn't have a manifesto. You know what I mean? It was more pragmatic. Yeah. Bob did a series of pieces. He did a piece for me because I stutter. And he gave me a text, kind of a dirty text, kind of obscene text that made me very embarrassed. And if I stuttered, they had the cassette recorders. Bob and Gordon, I forget, maybe two, three, four people. And they would listen to me, and they were recording me on the cassettes. And if I made a mistake, boom, they'd rewind.
Play it again.
One would rewind on words, one on syllables. It was organized different. So all of a sudden you get this time delays of speech. Very, very, very beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah, that piece.
That was Ashley.
No, that was one of Bob's pieces, yeah. Bob was working as a sound engineer for films in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Speak about the. I was sitting in the room.
I used to do I'm Sitting in a Room
as
a tape piece. I recorded that and I would play that piece. See, that was easy to play on a concert because it was on tape. So that was easy. I do that piece.
Where did the piece?
I'm sitting in a room. Well, we could almost do it here.
Could we?
No, because you have to rewind. That was a piece I discovered when I was at Brandeis. And I invented a text. I didn't think too much about it. I invented the text. The process is the content of the piece. So I just sat down and I made up a text. I am sitting in a room different from the one you are in now. I am recording the sound, you know, so forth. And then I started the machine outside. And I came in and spoke that. Okay. Then I went out again and I rewound the tape and I spliced it on another machine, copy. So I made a copy of a copy of a copy, and pretty soon
all you could tell was
the resonances of the space.
This time it was
that piece, and then I did this echo location piece. I studied bats. It's that opera by Strauss, Fledermaus.
Oh,
a bat is a Fledermaus.
Yeah.
I was interested in bats because they are beautiful sound artists, right? Mm. They send out pulse waves and they echolocate. So I met a person who worked for a company in Arlington, Massachusetts, that made these beautiful pulse wave oscillators that you can send out pulses. You can walk around. And I made a piece for those pulse wave oscillators where performers walk in the dark and you can hear the room because the echoes are, the sounds are sounds are bouncing off everything.
Have you a description of what we call minimalism?
Yeah.
Because we have a special definition in Europa of minimalism.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what to say. You mean, what I think the Europeans think is minimalism is music that's repetitive.
Mm.
You know, not necessarily minimal, but I never thought about it. What the definition?
You don't think about that.
Not much, except Tom Johnson, you know, the critic, used that word for the first time. He was reviewing a concert of mine, and he used that word.
For
why?
Minimalism. He thought my music was very minimal. I forget what piece it was.
Yes.
Well, I have to be minimal. It's not an aesthetic for me, really. It's not aesthetic, but in order to achieve that, I have to eliminate so many other things.
It's almost like a scientific experiment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I can't have a melody. I can't have much timbre. I can't have stop and start. You know, it's got to be very simple so that that phenomenon is audible. It's just as simple as that, you know. We used to have a lot of fun, though.
But your ideas are very clear.
That's because I'm simple-minded. I'm not too smart.
You're minimalist.
I am not too smart. Sometimes I don't know what I'm doing exactly, you know, in terms of science and technology. Really, I don't.
But you know what you want to do.
Yeah, sure. We stopped performing together when we started to make each of us. All of a sudden, when we performed, four of us, the pieces were about 20 minutes long. That seemed to be our time length. I don't know why. We didn't plan it that way, but, you know. And then all of a sudden, everybody's piece was all of a sudden 40 minutes long. I know that Bob started making bigger pieces.
It happened like that.
I don't know. So we just, and then we went our own way. I wanted to, you know, to get together again and do some concerts with the four of us. But I don't think Bob wants to do it.
No?
I think it would be fun. I was speaking to Mimi Johnson the other night. She's married to Bob, and she has a record company that I do music. This is lovely music. She was Max Ernst was her uncle. Her aunt was the painter Dorothea Tanning. And Dorothea Tanning married Max Ernst. So and she was talking to some other people, and they said, well, what are you doing this for? Why are you into this? What is this? She said, because we were having fun. She didn't mean it in a frivolous way, but it was like it made her life in we were having an interesting time, you know? Do performances, call each other up. We used to meet on the airplane, you know. It was exciting. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. We had no aircom, you know. We did concerts with very cheap equipment, you know. One amplifier, two amplifiers, some stuff.
That was your equipment?
Yeah, it was our own equipment. Yeah, it was good, yeah. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. 9 o'clock, time to go to bed.
No more of this formal interview stuff. So you were a friend of John Cage's or a student of John Cage's?
Who, me? I was a friend of John Cage's.
What is John Cage for you?
Silence.
What do you mean by silence?
I will not speak any further.
What do you mean? You have to.
Well, he's got his piece about silence. Yeah. He's got a book about silence.
The book is called Silence, yeah.
Right. That's all. How many minutes of silence? 6 minutes and
4 minutes and 33 seconds.
4 minutes and 33 seconds.
Because you are very young, you don't know about.
We're asking you because you're young.
And you have studied philosophy,
right?
And you why you know?
No, that's all I know is that he presented silence to the world of music listeners as something to consider. John Cage.
Yeah. Do you think there is silence? I mean.
Do I think there is
silence? What do you think he meant by silence? Do you think?
I think he meant to take a break from the things that are always coming in and hear the things that are usually unheard. What do you think he meant?
Yeah, well, I know what he meant because he said
tell
it.
Me.
I mean, that's
tell
the only
me.
Reason.
You think silence is a composition?
In the sense that it's an anti-composition, I mean, it
Well, she said there's a book called Silence. He visited an anechoic chamber, which is a place where there's no sound in it. There's no echo. And it's virtually, practically sound-free. it's used in science. And he came out of the chamber and he said, I heard two sounds. One was high and one was low. What were they? And the engineer said, the low is your blood flowing and the high is your nervous system. So John Cage said, well, in that case, there's no such thing as silence. There's always sound.
From within your own body.
Yeah, from somewhere. So his piece, the silent piece, is really paying attention to the sounds around you. If we didn't do anything, move for 4 minutes and 33 seconds.
You're forced to listen to anything.
Well, you're not forced to.
You're welcome.
Let's just listen a couple of seconds. No, you're talking. You're talking. See?
I heard
your friend there. Yeah. You know, that's a beautiful piece of his because you hear the environmental sounds around you. It's the washing machine.
And the machine is stuck.
Yeah.
Oh, I was wondering, what do you hear when things are supposedly silent? How about within yourself? What do you hear?
Within myself? Well, I don't. I'm thinking that piece is not about within yourself. It's what's going on around you.
See, suddenly the silence becomes so interesting.
Yeah, sure.
Because we bring that
That's
up.
Because of John Cage. You know those gardens and those Zen gardens and that just have the raked sand and a few stones. They change all the time by the time of day and the sun and the moon and those environmental things. It's not so much about the thing itself, it's the environment.
Circumstances that contribute to how it appears.
Yeah. That was
just
a
like
different...
at Chirasi, when you look out the 12-walled window, as the day progresses, it becomes different colors, different views, even though it's the same thing. It makes visible the invisible, the way that it bounces off of the physical environment.
Wait.
Now it's time to go to bed, right? It must be 9:15 already. I'm just kidding.
Way past Albert's bedtime.
I'm just kidding.
Clocker is this music.